The word gizmos kind of comes up today, top of mind. And we'll be talking about some gizmos.
Giggle, right?
Yeah. But these are gizmos with a real purpose here, too. And guess what? They're coming from Montana State University. You might not have known this, but they've got a program going on there that is working with innovative institute or research regarding military tech and what's coming out of that. Our soldiers are better protected. They're more mobile on the field. Are we doing that? Yeah, we're doing that here at Montana State University. We'll talk about it. Al Dibiter's with us here, and he's a graduate of Billings West High School. Gizmos. Well, maybe that's not the whole of it, but I think you'll get that, and it'll be fun to talk about here as well as the inspiration for education and how that moves people forward in their careers. Today on Voices of Montana. Isn't it funny? Gizmos, it just has a name. Or it just draws a picture. We curse gizmos. We bless gizmos. What are gizmos in your life? I'll tell you what they are. I'll actually have Al Dibiter tell us what they are in his life and in the lives of American soldiers as well. Welcome to Voices of Montana. It's good to have you joining us. I hope you're surviving the heat here. We'll talk maybe about some of those record temperatures. I've never been in heat in Montana that's like 114 degrees, at least natural heat, and we suffered through it. But we'll talk about that here. Al Dibiter is with us in studio here to talk about a program from Montana State University. Also, let me pull it up here because there's a kind of a name. They call it the MilTech program here, but he's the executive director of the Institute for National Security Research and Education, and he's right here in studio. Al, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Thank you for coming alongside.
Glad to be here.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Does that opening about gizmos and all that, does that ring true at all? Or
yes.
It does. Okay.
It does. Yeah, it does.
What do you guys do? Tell us about this institute. There are some really cool creations that we learned about in a presentation you did a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going, we got to get Al on the air here to talk about these gizmos.
Yep. Yeah. The gizmos are very fun to talk about. They are. And there's a lot more to the gizmos, but when you think of what people are really interested in, there's a lot that happens at MSU. It's been going on for 22 years with the Institute for National Security Research Education. We live in acronym soup, and you're not supposed to say acronyms because it doesn't mean anything when you're done. But most of what we do is take concepts or requirements from a federal military customer. And they'll say to us, hey, Montana State, we want to achieve this result for this much money and this much time. Give us a thing. The most common thing that every citizen in Montana can be proud of is when you look at a soldier or Marine and you see the plate carrier that carries the ballistic plate. That's a product of Montana State. And that's an example. And we've got about 80 active projects today happening right now it. But they can look at that and say, that happened in my state, my land-grant institution, Montana State University. That's just one example that's just the most common one that people would see. So that's a gizmo.
What?
Thank you. Yeah.
So what is a plate carrier, though?
It's when you look at a soldier. So I'm a civilian. I've never spent a day in danger in my life. So, but it's what you see on their chest and their back and their side that carries a plate. That's a bulletproof plate. It also carries communication gear, what they call their acronym soup, IFAC, individual first aid kit, and all kinds of gear on that plate carrier. But it's the primary survivability item, along with a helmet and things like that.
So. It's got to be cool in the world of gizmos. Again, we'll have to get off that theme here pretty soon, to be able to work on something like this that improves the lives of individual soldiers. How do you know what they need, Al?
By asking them, and we talked about this before the show, Tom, which I appreciated, was did we invent this at MSU? No. There's a lot of inventions that happen at MSU. Our particular programs we have, and there's several of them, the best thing we do is we ask the user and their chain of command, what does success look like to you? And if we invented it here in Montana without that operational experience, we'd fail every time.
Right.
So we're very good at getting the voice of the user and asking them, and they'll give us sometimes little nuances that make a huge difference. So when we're done, we turn over a tech data package, we call it, or a prototype, or information research report, or all kinds of things. And we facilitated the development based on their input.
I appreciate how you're using what is out there and then trying to improve. What kind of improvement did you bring to this vest?
You know, weight is this, they call it swap, size, weight, and power, but a vest actually does have power in it, believe it or not now. But the type of materials that are used that make the wearer, the soldier, the Marine, the airman, the sailor, when they put it on, it goes on quickly. It has minimal weight, minimal materials. It's clean, slick. Things can attach to it quickly and securely. You can take it on and off quickly. A corpsman or a medic could come and take it off and treat a wound quickly. The biggest thing is they said, the soldier, the Marine, whoever, this is what I want. And we say, yes, sir. And we do that. We bring it to bear based on their input.
Al Dibert is with us. He's a graduate of Billings West and also Montana State University. Been around a little bit, but mostly in that area with MSU. You did some, as I understand previously, some design work on backpacks.
I was production manager. Everybody knows what Mystery Ranch is, thank God. Yeah. But I was at Dana Design. That's how old I am. And I've worked for just as a consultant for Sims and vendors for Patagonia. So yeah, when we started, we thought, let's do what we know what to do.
Yeah.
22 years ago is sewn products, but we do a lot more than that now.
And so, since 2004, 600 projects supporting over 200 Department of Defense and Homeland Security programs there as well. Mm-hmm. How do you get that churn going for those kinds of things?
It's like probably everybody who's listening, you do a really good job and they might come back again. That's a pretty simple business model. There's a lot more to it, as everybody knows, you create a culture that people say, that was a great experience when I paid Montana State to execute a project for me. We also hire 30% of our staff are veterans. They're still connected with their people. We have what's called military liaisons that help us speak the voice of the customer, know who to contact, and the processes of getting funding to flow from federal government to Montana State aren't simple, but MSU makes it easy. They facilitate a big part of our success is the people you'd never know that work in Montana Hall at MSU. I get unsolicited feedback about how good it is to work with MSU all the time. And they'll say, who was it in that office that facilitated this? So we're hitting on all cylinders. We're really fortunate.
Yeah.
Very fortunate.
And we'll talk about that because I read an article where you credit one of your professors there for really getting you going in the right direction. And I want to chat about that here a bit later on too, about,
trying to make me cry.
Well, yeah. Right. Yeah. Dr. Taylor. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But let's talk about, and Al Dibert again with us here, as I mentioned, executive director of the Institute for National Security Research and Education, the MilTech program. There's other programs here, that are associated with that as well. One of the questions that people around raise is how did MSU get, because this is like one of the top research departments at Montana State University.
Yeah.
What was the process of 2004 to today getting to that level?
Okay, great question. So it started off with what at the time was an earmark from Senator Burns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a partnership between what's called the Montana Manufacturing Extension Center, which is MSU, which everybody should know about. Awesome program.
It is.
And then another, you interviewed Daniel Giuliano a few weeks ago. He was associated with what's called TechLink, and that's another program at MSU, the gold standard in tech transfer licensing. Started off as a partnership between those programs with some earmark money, and it's really hard to get sustainable funding. A lot of programs can have to keep going back to the federal, your elected officials, which we do. We keep going back, but we were able to get sustainably funded by, again, our military liaisons, the people that retired as Colonel Admiral, Lieutenant Colonel, that say, here's who to work for, here's how to do it, and here's how funding can flow from different programs to Montana State through what we call our Partnership Intermediary Agreement, Federal Acquisition Regulation, FAR contracts, and things like that. But that's how it started. And then just being responsive, MSU is differentiated. We're not a coastal institution with tons of history that takes stuff for granted. It's a cultural thing in Montana that we get work done and we appreciate it. And another big thing is we kept a low profile for 20 plus years, and they appreciate that a lot. Mm. Our customers appreciate that we don't use them to promote ourselves. We just do good work and leave and hope they pay us again. It's been working. So
I think a lot of Montanans appreciate that as well. You know, do your job, do it well, and then go home and take care of your family and then get up and do it the next day.
Exactly.
The same way.
So they feel that. The customers feel that. Yeah. They say something's different here.
So. Was there a product or a sequence that kind of put you on the map, that put you over the top?
Yeah, I think, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the team we have. Yeah. The staff we have is truly unmatched.
100 people. I mean, that surprised me a little bit. Yeah.
And it really is. I just can't. The cliche of hire people smarter than you is it's hard. There's people who are just way faster, smarter. The younger generation is keeping us on our toes. But the staff we hired, I would say, is in the staff at MSU are literally 90%+ of the reason we're here. But how it got started, I would say what was a project, when we say size, weight, and power swap, a project called Design Light, where we were asked to take everything a Marine rifle squad carries, uses, eats, deploys with, and brought in a bunch of engineers and systems integration people, composites, electronics, even race car people. Grams matter with race cars.
Oh, wow.
Grams matter. Yeah. And again, I'm a civilian, but people who have to carry this stuff in the heat and nobody, they care about their knees. They do, but they have to do their mission. And so we brought people in and started to do prototypes of this would be lighter if we did these things, use these materials. And that platform is probably what kicked us off into a lot more things that we've been doing. And that's comms gear, first aid kits, everything they carry. Wear or use was part of that report, and that was 16 years ago now. It's a long time ago.
Jeez. You know, it's hard to kind of fathom that, isn't it? How fast 20 years can go by when you're just looking at project here or project there and developed, and then you look back, and pretty soon you've got 600 projects completed too. You know, Al Dibert is with us here, the MilTech program, Montana State University, executive director of the Institute for National Security Research and Education. We're going to be hearing just a little bit about the narco boats. And what are those? Well, we'll find out. It's a gizmo, okay? Welcome back here from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Just got some heat figures here. And it was really hot. It was really hot yesterday. There's 114 here, 115 there, 109. I'm just going to stay cool right now at the moment. Yeah. Oh, thanks, Cody. A little fire going in the background.
Friday.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Hey, Al, thanks for coming in studio. It's really fun to have you here as well. Hot in Bozeman yesterday?
Yes, sir. It was miserable.
Yep. Are you guys working on anything that keeps a soldier cool?
We have. Yeah. And again, it was like a research project that didn't work. But we've done phase change materials and just the way you design something to improve airflow. So I thought about that yesterday, is if you make them just a little bit more comfortable, they're a little bit better off. So, yeah.
Well, that's the thing about, innovation, is that if you just keep thinking about things, it just never seems to end, or there doesn't have to be an end to this product's innovation, so to speak. So we're going to come back. I want to hear about this gizmo that came out of MilTech program here, the narco boat. What is that?
So narco boat's just kind of a fun play on words. That's not the official name, but if you Google it, you'll see it. Is the Marines and the Army the same way? They said, we need a way to deliver X amount of pounds or square feet of gear, so many kilometers, autonomously. And it's the same way they bring illicit drugs to our southern shores. Is the narcos, that's where it comes from, are really good at surreptitiously delivering expensive stuff. And so the it's obviously a joke. We work with our narco partners. They're not our partners, they're our enemies. But that's the name they gave to it, is let's copy what's successful, make it affordable, And so we work for our Marine Corps customer, and basically, again, one of the reasons we're still around is MSU's history of working with agriculture.
Yeah, you were making that connection
the
earlier.
The DNA in the institution is, how do you go build credibility with a farmer or a rancher who's like defined by independence? It's hard, but that same DNA allows us to hear things from our Marine Corps customer and go find industry partners using the MSU DNA they have and say, yes, you can go find industry partners and put these things together as a very much, we call it an evaluation sample. It's not even a prototype. It's so early, and put these things together and say, is this what you're looking for? And then again, like we said previously, the users come in and they're especially Marines, they're good at insulting civilians, and it's kind of fun. They're pretty deadpan in general, saying, what idiot invented this part of this thing? And then we get their input and keep spirally developing.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's a gizmo that is being tested. It delivers first aid gear. It delivers food. It delivers all kinds of stuff to austere locations.
The narco boats?
It will. So it's in development, like everything we work
on. It's in development now, right.
Yeah.
What's the piece that it needs? What's the snap that you're looking for?
I don't know. They don't allow me to work anymore. we'll send MSU staff to Okinawa and to Coronado. And then they listen to the customer. I bet you this one's cost and ruggedization. I'll bet you anything. It's like, what is this going to cost me? And does it work in tough conditions?
Gotcha.
That's a gizmo.
I love that. Yeah. Al Dibert with us here. It's not just the MilTech program, which is kind of probably a name for a number of programs that you guys have got there. And I'm looking at the Applied Research Laboratory, Applied, the keyword there, as you'll note.
That's right.
Defensive Innovation Unit, the On-Ramp Hub. How do all these things come together? Did they all play a part in this development or the VEST?
So the MilTech program has been around longest, but it is really important. We've got a Department of Homeland Security partnership intermediary, one with what they just call the intelligence community. We've got a manufacturing industrial-based group that does what's called Mentor Protégé. And we've got the Applied Research Lab and just other partnerships that we have. And, of course, I'm dying inside wondering if I forgot something for our amazing staff, and I'm sorry if I did. But it does all work together. There's programs that our institute runs and manages and leads with our leadership team. Mm-hmm. And there's other parts of Montana State that we support. We help unburden the people that are doing the research, making relationships with customers. We take off, just lighten their load so they can focus more on their research. We take off the finance part. And MSU also has an amazing team called Shared Services that does that anyways. We do it more for the national security type of research for other programs at MSU.
I haven't thrown this figure out there yet, but it was $65 million, I think, maybe a year ago. This year, you were saying $76 million in research. Are those grants? Would you call those?
Yeah, and the way academic institutions capture their impact is, what did you spend? Mm-hmm. And so that could be over, if we have 80 active projects now, that would be over the closing of the project, the managing. Some of the periods of performance are 3 years, some are 6 months. And so all these programs do work together. We share resources all the time. The On-Ramp Hub is one of our newest programs, and it's the most public-facing. That's part of the reason we're able to talk about what we're doing now. We kept a very low profile for a long time, still need to, but the state of Montana deserves to know what their land-grant institution's doing. And because there's a lot of people going, what goes on there? And a lot of students get great experience working on these things, and they get real-world experience. Nothing's pretend that we do. They're working for a real federal customer. But the On-Ramp Hub, which has been very public-facing on purpose, allows companies to call that organization and say, here's what I have. Does it work for customer X? And it's never clear. It's a challenge, but that's what they're stood up for. Yeah.
Is there what's the ethics behind this then? Because even though I noted in some of the research, land grant universities were originally charged, that was part of their edict, was to be for military research purposes, and so MSU was following that. What's the ethical component behind this here? Because I'm sure you'll have people that are asking questions. Are we creating? What are we making bombs at MSU? Yeah. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but
it is. Yeah. It's a great question though. And I don't know the numbers, but 90%+ of military deployments are humanitarian. So we never hear about that because it's not exciting.
Thank you.
It doesn't make people get angry. But the component behind it is survivability, is medical, and you know, protecting soldiers, reducing cost of components is a huge part of what we do. And a big thing, and again, I'm a civilian. I'm not an expert in national security matters, but
they have a lot on their plate. I mean, say that, I think, to say that it's a complex world.
Very. And a lot of prevention of genocide. If you'd imagine what Ukraine would be like right now, or Taiwan, without the technology developed well outside of Inslee at Montana State, that it's the prevention of those things. And even if somebody is going to use a lethal component, they used to carpet bomb, and now it's very, very, very precision.
Yeah.
And a big thing, again, you're not going to read about it, is Joint Non-Lethal Weapons Directorate. Our military invested an inordinate amount of money making non-lethal weapons.
Wow.
And we work on those things. We have, not working on it now, but there's just a lot more than what you hear. A tremendous amount. It just doesn't follow. It doesn't make clickbait, so you don't hear about it.
Right.
Doesn't make people enraged. It's a calming thing when you see how much of a dedication our military has to keeping people in alive, including our adversaries.
So is there then that component for the discussion about these things? Mm-hmm. How do you bring in ethics? Because technology runs way in front of our ethics regarding things.
That's a great point. Yeah. A lot of it is Montana State. They will not, there's things that MSU will not do. And we just don't even talk about it. We just don't do it. We're not going to do these things.
Yeah, good.
And so following federal law, state policy, and then the culture of the institution, land grant law, that MSU and every state has at least one, it says they'll teach military tactics. And that could be marching, shooting, but in our case, it's the maturity of technology and things like that. So done a ton of medical things that then the other ethical part is when you develop something that saves a life in combat and it gets what we call commercialized. If anybody wants to look up XSTAT, XSTAT, that's something that was developed by a special forces medic to prevent bleed out from an exit wound.
I don't like
to talk about that stuff, but that's been commercialized in our country. So it's saving lives. Not everything's that way. I don't want to pretend, but there's a lot that happens commercially that's a benefit and a lot that prevents genocide and prevents things.
That's so important. And to get out there as we're talking about this as well, that's really the idea behind this is to save lives too. And secure reasons as
and
well.
Prevent war.
Okay, I got like 10 seconds. What's the next gizmo we're talking about?
Oh, man, you got me on. Oh, geez, I'm looking at my list here. How about I make it up and we come back to that? Sorry, man.
This is how it's done, actually.
Blew it.
No. You're a radio guy now.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Talking about an MSU program that facilitates innovation, especially in military arenas, the MilTech program, and also the Institute. I got to pull it up here because it's got a long name. It disappeared. Al Dibert. Al, what's this Institute for?
Research and Education.
Institute for National Security Research. There it is. Thank you for pulling it back there, Cody. Some interesting facts here, too. More than, as you know, we talked earlier, 600 defense projects, 200 military programs out of this MilTech program here as well. $65 million, now $76 in annual research expenditures. The Department of Defense works with over 100,000 companies nationwide as well. So I got to think we're going to talk about another new gizmo out here as well. But I got to think that this program also introduces those companies to the larger body of MSU.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Gizmo first or companies first? I should have just.
Let's do the companies first.
Okay, here. Companies. Yeah. So our type of organizations we have, the on-ramp hub.
Yeah.
The manufacturing industrial base, military industrial base group, and our what we call our partnership intermediaries, very much in the DNA of those programs and the laws and the people that took time to stand them up. is to expand what we call the industrial and innovation base for companies that are never going to look at what they call grants.gov or SAM.gov. The programs we have, OnRamp, Industrial Base, our partnership intermediaries, and MSU as a whole, we reach out and say, here are these opportunities. And MSU gets to kind of be that air gap, is to say, we'll handle all the misery of what they call CFR 200. Don't look that up or you get depressed, but all the rules you have to follow, which are important to our nation. They're important to ethics. There's insider pool everywhere, but the ethics of fairness. The state of Montana does a remarkable job of again, reaching out to find industry partners that we then can pay. We get paid by the federal government, MSU, and pay companies to support these projects. So it expands that base. And it's not just making stuff. It's subject matter experts that are in all kinds of things, even, you know, freeze drying, optics, photonics, hyperspectral imaging, all over the place. So that's expanding the industrial base is a part of what academic institutions do.
And look at what's happening in that Bozeman area as well. All those things that are pushing the pedal forward on innovation are happening
in
your area. So you get community involved. You have a lot of students involved in the program.
Yeah, we've got 15 to 20 students right now. And one thing we're really, really proud of is over the last 10 years, we've hired 23 of our student staff into full-time work, and many of them have students that work for them now. And again, the 99% reason we're doing what we're doing is our staff. And when you find someone who's good, you literally cannot afford to not have them on your team. You just have to. Yeah. And so we drag them in and threaten them or something like that. But the team we have is unmatched, truly unmatched.
How do students take part in the program through accredited courses? Is it an internship or what's the connection?
It's more of a job. It's like you're going to get paid X dollars an hour to work for INSRI, OnRamp Hub, Applied Research Lab, Industrial Base Program, Miltech. And you're going to be assigned, obviously, a supervisor and a role. And that could be a big part of what we do also is called information research and analysis and supply chain manufacturing things. Lots of, again, prototyping design work. So they'll be involved. They'll have a supervisor, and they're working on very real things. And it's awesome. It's intimidating to see how smart these young punks are. And and that they, you know, it's not just on a computer. There's young men that I used to grind welds in Glendive. And looking at the welds, some of these 21-year-old kids, and they're not kids, it's pretty remarkable what they can do running milling machines, 3D printers, and very impressive.
Yeah, that and it's cool to see that, you know, that development go forward. This is a good time. We'll save the radar for kind of going out of the break here a little bit.
All right.
I want to talk about, you've got a soft spot in your heart for Dr. Taylor, who inspired your path through college. And I read an article, you know, coming out of high school, you didn't exactly have this plan all planned out. You know, tell us how important that is to you. And tell us, as you're in education now, how Dr. Taylor flows through Al Dibert into today's students.
Yeah, that's a great question and a life-changing thing is if you think of an academic institution, MSU, U of M, they get this bizarre human material. Mm-hmm. And it's like a machine. And you take them through and there's weed out courses. You got to be a critical thinker. And those people like Dr. Bob Taylor, who just meant the world to me, and I know there's other people like him that have meant the world to other students, but he was mine, that kind of knew here. And if I graduated in the bottom quarter of my class in 1983, go Bears, might have done a little better, but they had to take me at MSU. They just did, because that's what they do, and they're good at it. And they hire academic professors that, you know, again, there's all over the map, but somebody who says, this person is good at these things. Let me, which Bob Taylor did, here's what Al is good at. Let's focus on that and tell him bluntly, painfully, here's what you're not good at. don't try to be good at those things. You're not going to make it.
And, a college student needs to hear that, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. As hard as it is. Someone like him, then I had the opportunity to work for him throughout graduate school through a master's program. So, you know, every day on the job, you've got a person whose skill and gift isn't just teaching, it's developing people into better professionals, better citizens of this country, better critical thinkers. And so he did that for me in all kinds of ways, both as an instructor, grad school advisor, and boss, you know. And it just made a big difference on, I may not be the greatest student, but I got something to offer this world. So yeah, it's been a big deal.
Did you get a chance to tell him?
Yeah. And it's hard cause I'll, I cry at beer commercials.
Me too.
Emotional person, but not enough. I now take that as a challenge to be able to call him again and I more passively, but a great person.
That's great.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
There's a lot of those at MSU. So.
I want to save some time. We'll take an early break here. Wait, we got to do the radar first.
Okay.
And then we'll save some, cause I want to hear more of these, the development side of things. Here
okay.
Too.
Here's an unexciting gizmo, TPS 75 radar. It's ancient. It's critical to, again, preventing genocide, preventing deaths is a radar system that's really old. Its replacement has been planned, I think, for 15 or 20 years, and it's still not out. So they have to modernize this old thing. The paint is faded when you see these things. So this isn't exciting. This isn't a James Bond gizmo, but it's a critical piece of our national defense system. And modernizing those things. A lot of times when you have something old, you cannot maintain it. If a part breaks, it's not on the shelf at all. And so reverse engineering things, modernizing things, so modern electronics, modern software, sensors can go into it as a life extension. We've done quite a few of those things. You know, again, we operate under CUI, Controlled Unclassified Information, OPSEC, Operational Security, all those things. But there's a lot of other communication gear and things like that, that even if they're bought in small quantities by you know, the tip of the spear people, there's Montana companies involved in making very, very critical small volume items for people who are in extreme danger all the time. You know, I'm very proud of that. And again, it's to help them to be survivable and to be able to operate and communicate. And so modernizing things, not a cool gizmo, but it's a cool process. Yeah. Someone's got to do that stuff, you know. So
is it taking like the analog into digital, so to speak?
That's a part of it. Yes, sir. That's a great point. Yeah. And just components you can't buy anymore. You just cannot buy certain things. And so you have to redesign it, and it has to integrate. And again, we didn't develop anything. We took the problem set from our customer. And if you're a maintainer, you're an airman that there's not going to do any movie about you ever. You're just a person in the dirt, sweating and keeping our country safe, and you got to replace a circuit board and it doesn't work. We want them to be happy. And so we ask them what would make this work, and they help us.
Are we behind? Are we ahead? Are we running even when it comes to competition for new ideas out there?
You know, I bet for the new idea generation, I bet we're ahead. And I am not even qualified to answer that when it comes to space and cyber. And I wish I was, but I'm not even qualified to answer. I know the innovation process is something that's just critical to us. Then the procurement process slows things down. We all know those stories, but the military and our politicians have done a great job creating other programs to keep fairness, but speed. So, yeah.
I appreciate that. We'll come back and talk more of those little gizmos, too, that's coming out of the program, the MilTech program, but also there's a number of programs there, Applied Research Laboratory, the Defense Innovation Unit, DIU, or the On-Ramp Hub. Really good to have our guest in studio today. Al Dibert is with us here, Executive Director for INSRA. That's the Institute for National Security Research and Education. It's the MilTech program, responsible for some innovation and then also facilitating innovation when it comes to products that are going to be for defense purposes for the U.S. of A. A lot of those turn into commercial applications as well. So it's really interesting, Al. Thanks for coming in, too. And
it's great to be here.
Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. A Montana guy, graduated Billings West, went to MSU there, and then here you are, like some 20 years later, with this program going on. Give us another little gizmo as we come on back.
I'm ready for one.
Do, go.
It's called one of my favorite acronyms. My favorite acronyms is SHRIMP, and I don't even know what it stands for anymore, but STORMS, Small Tactical Optical Rifle Mounted Target Designator Laser Range Finder. So that's a small device. I think it's on every Bradley fighting vehicle. I'm not sure. This is quite a while ago. But someone had to figure out how you polish all these lenses and glue them together. And the gizmo's exciting. Our process on the gizmo is unexciting. It has a lot of statistics and a lot of manufacturing process things where we work with a vendor, and help them to increase their productivity on how do you grow this optical material? How do you slice and dice it? Which is interesting. It's like logging, but the parts are $80,000 for a little cube. And then how do you polish it and stick it together so it can fit inside of a small device? So that's the part we played on the storm unit. And and again, there's 100, just bragging up for the state of Montana, citizens of Montana like myself, to be excited about what the state is doing. We've helped field over 150 items that are out there now. We've helped improve processes in sustainment centers where they rebuild F-16s and C-130s and shipyards and things like that. And MSU's Applied Research Lab, a secure facility, got a perfect score. And I can't tell you how, and I had zero part of it other than I got to sit there and listen to it. The staff at I'm never going to stop bragging up the staff we have. They're truly a national treasure. You don't get a perfect score. We're in the top 2% in the nation. The state of Montana's Applied Research Lab is in the top 2%, and the people that run that place and Miltech and Industrial Base and the On-Ramp Hub and other more sensitive things are just the best team in the world, and I mean it. And it feels good saying it. Oh. Because when people come and meet and they go, yeah, sure, and then they meet the staff, and we have people come visit, they go, what do you want to talk about? And I'll say, I just need you to meet our employees and our staff. That's all you need to know.
I appreciate it when people come in and they can brag on their staff because in genuineness, you know.
Yeah, what else is there?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. That's really great. Yeah. What do you? I know you can't. Maybe if you have to kill me, do. But what are you working on now? What's out there?
So a lot of drone work, and I just think another thing that Montana people are unique at is exercises, field user evaluations, human factors exercises, limited user evaluation. So we support tons of exercises. We'll send teams to things that years ago it was called the Marine Equipping Challenge, and you sit there and you interview Marines that are trying out new things. And in addition to trying not to laugh because they're very funny when they hate something.
Oh, yeah.
But learning about what the user needs and what do they like and not like. So we do a lot of that as well. There's gizmos being tested that help things navigate in what they would call a denied environment and things like that. And again, a lot of, I don't know the statistics, but a vast majority of military deployments are humanitarian. And how do you improve that mission? That has nothing to do with lethality. It has everything to do with post-natural disasters and things like that. So it's a lot of what we do.
I know not enough time for this, but is technology going to get us to that point where we can solve our conflicts?
I hope so. Yeah. It's beyond me. Yeah. I'm a Montana person, but we do get to talk to people who talk about the process of preventing war. That's the biggest thing that our military tries to do, is to prevent that through non-lethal means. Yeah. So anyways, yeah.
Yeah, good. Thank you so much, man. There's so much to learn here and so much to know. Yep. But I think the takeaway is how cool that it's happening in Montana.
Yep.
And it's happening at a high level in Montana.
Very high. Yeah. We're differentiated. And again, people just like to experience our culture in Montana and the responsiveness. And it's a great team to be a part of. And I appreciate this time.
Al, they call him Dr. Dibert, Dr. Al Dibert, but he's just a regular guy, as we know by now. Yeah. Hey, my thanks to Cody Ross. Al, good to have you in studio, yep, man.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.